welcome our wonderful, wonderful audience. This is Dr. Peter Breggin with Ginger Breggin.
Hi, folks.
And this is the Breggin Hour. You can hear us across the platforms on the internet. We're a one-hour interview show. Today, we are interviewing a delightful woman, a doctor, Tara Lynn Sell, S-E-L-L, Ph.D. She's a licensed psychotherapist. She specializes in understanding mental health when standard explanations and treatments fall short. Her work integrates psychology with principles from nutrition, functional medicine, examining brain health, sleep stress, and medication effects, how they shape emotional cognitive health. And my understanding is that she does do deep prescribing. She is helping people come off the medications, which most PhDs like herself are really nervous about doing. And it's been left largely to those of us who are psychiatrists to deep prescribe, and occasionally family doctors. But welcome to our world. You seem to be in a very similar world, Tara Lynn, that we're in, trying to figure out how in this profession we call psychiatry, we actually get to deliver services to people.
Yes. I am so happy to be here. I'm like fangirling over here. I'm like, this is so exciting for me to be here. I want to make sure that everybody knows I am not a prescriber. I'm not authorized to prescribe. But as you were saying, I think fear in the mental health world, mental health providers, PhDs, LPCs, social workers are so afraid to touch this with a 10-foot pole. And yeah. So it is left to other people to do. And we're the ones that see the patients all the time, right? So I feel like it is definitely a gap in service. And so hopefully, you know, I can help fill that gap a little bit.
So you're really the next generation of professionals pushing that Overton window a little further open to be able to fully offer services to patients. And, you know, I never realized until I was thinking about your coming on the show today that Peter really is the father of deep prescribing, because he's written the only medical books about that. And he's been doing deep prescribing for as long as he's been in practice, which is 60 years plus. That's and he's been pushing on that window really hard, trying to get the word out.
I wish I knew him 20 some odd years ago when I first started. I wish I knew of the work when I first started. But having been introduced to it, I've been working on this part of it for probably 10 years out of my 20 some year career in psychology. But it wasn't until recently that I was introduced to some of the literature that Peter has written. And it just gave words to things that I had not been introduced to before, like being spellbound. That was profound, like just to offer that word, because I was also somebody who was largely spellbound myself by using psychiatric medication. So there's that piece of it too. So I think that was such a wonderful terminology to just, you know, when you finally put a word to something that you're like, that's it. That's what I'm thinking about. That's the word that describes exactly what I've been through as a person. And now what I see my clients going through, or particularly their loved ones, what they're noticing with the person who's been medicated has been profound. So that word alone, thank you for that. Thank you for that description.
Well, thank you for that acknowledgement.
Yes.
What we're talking about, folks, here, something that I noticed very early on, and that nobody was talking about around me, which is that people can't really well evaluate how they've been affected by a drug. It's the same thing that I'm going through now. As in August, I had a stroke that affected the ventral tegmentum of my thalamus, which is like a gateway to everything in the brain. And I've had this struggle with a lot of different effects from it.
It was like a shotgun that went off. We couldn't predict exactly what the effects were going to be, and we discovered them over a period of time.
Well, the biggest effect I noticed was that my clients who I would talk to on FaceTime, and my wife whom I would see in my bed and in my breakfast table, bump into along the way all day long, were having a bit of trouble recognizing my presence. I seemed to be like behind a veil.
We had trouble reading your face.
Yeah.
Because your face went very, very still.
Yeah, and it's that cognition piece. There, we just had an interview today on our show, and the guy said something very profound. I'm just going to say it here because it said, once a patient starts on medication, this is a guy who was using medication, not a clinician or anything. Once a patient starts on medication, they are no longer able to monitor their own behavior. And yes. And that to me is exactly what you're talking about in yourself right now too, right? Like when you're in your own body, you don't understand your own deficits sometimes, right? You don't understand how you appear to other people.
Yeah, well, it's you suffer injuries within your brain.
It's called anosognosia.
That's the other term, yes, that I was introduced to by you. And I'm like, oh my gosh, that one is huge as well.
Like a left-sided weakness and you don't really recognize it.
Yes.
Because you have enough injury to your frontal lobes, as well as your arm areas, the brain, that you don't really even see the injury that you have. And Ginger was much more aware of my deficits in relating than I was.
Peter, your articles talking about spellbinding and about anosognosia especially were incredibly helpful to me. Right after your stroke, because first of all, I recognized it as an injury. And every time someone hears Peter has had a stroke, it's like it's such a traumatic event that almost nothing else that a person survives has that effect that I've ever seen on individuals who hear about it. People just go, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. And I deeply appreciate that. But it also makes me realize that so often we just suddenly think that that's an end game. And what I have found is there's so much room for healing. And the program that Peter was doing at the Aviv Clinic with hyperbaric oxygen therapy treatment made a huge difference too. 3 months of that.
Well, who knew that? I mean, I don't know how long ago you wrote those papers, Peter, but it was quite a while ago, right? The origination of those things. Who knew that the application of that would be now for you, right? Personally, like who knew that this is like a full circle moment for you
in so many ways. Yes.
In so many ways. Right. So anyway, I just wanted to acknowledge that just some of that terminology has been profound in my own practice, and sharing that terminology with my own clients has also been profound for them to be able to put the right words to, you know, what they're going through as well. And like I said, as I'll call myself, I hate this, like a psych med survivor story, but I was that person too. So that was, these are all full circle moments for me of still continued awakening, when it comes to what was and what is now for myself. So
let me clarify a little bit for our audience. We both believe in you and I in getting things across simply, directly. What I'm talking about is a concept of medication spellbinding, where the taking of psychoactive substances makes it difficult for a person to assess whether they're doing better or worse, to assess their place, their situation. And that, for example, in my legal work, as I'm going over patient records, often a really terrible sign is where the patient comes in after 1 week on Prozac and says, "Doc, I've never felt better in my whole life." And the therapist says, "Well, that's just great. There's still room for improvement. We can raise your dose." And in fact, the patient's on the verge of mania.
Because
why should a drug make us feel better than any time in our life? It's a dysfunction. The drugs cause dysfunctions, and One of the things the brain can do in the face of a dysfunction is imagine it's doing better than ever, which is the secret to drug addiction, that people are really
even when
out
you
of
talk
it, but
yeah when you talk about spellbinding and the acknowledgement of like people with alcoholism or other drugs of abuse, right? Like that's been talked about a lot. Like you don't understand where you're at in this addiction process, right?
Yeah,
like
you're in
the
denial.
Person who you're in denial, right? There's a lot of words that we use for people that have substance use disorders that we resonate with, but somehow people on psychiatric medications are left out of that conversation because this is like, this is supposed to help you, whereas those things only hurt you, right? So there's only one way to look at drugs and alcohol, and that's harmful, but the way we look at medication is helpful, right? Like, so we have to look at it in helpful terminology. And this is why you guys need a YouTube channel, because Ginger's over here like making faces like she's going to lose it. Like, you know, your audience needs to see this stuff that you're doing. So, but so these are those conversations that I think are largely important to have, not just with terminology, but with concepts, right? So the idea that psychiatric medication, the thing that's supposed to help you, hurts you, is something that most people aren't even willing to accept in conversation, you know, until it's too late, often until it's too late for those people. So, yeah.
Of course, when they come off medication, gradually with support from a therapist and maybe a family member, which is how I like to do it. I like to take couples, have a couple and take one off.
It's better
them.
Together. We are better together. Even that concept, you know, therapists and other mental health professionals at my level that don't prescribe, we help people get off drugs and alcohol and smoking and all these other things. But, you know, but psychiatric medication, no. We're not supposed to do that, you know, conceptually. And it's like, it's the same. It's not the same, but it's very similar. Right? Like if somebody wants to stop doing something, we should be able to support them in what they want to do.
That's
where I sit when it comes to psychiatric medication. If you don't want, if you know that it's hurting you and you want to stop doing the thing that's hurting you, you should have support. You should have the support that you need to get through that. And that's where we come in. So.
And it's the drug companies that have actually captured public media.
Also organized psychiatry.
And organized psychiatry.
Together.
And so forth and so on.
Organized psychology. We can't leave us out.
Yes, ma'am.
Because,
organized psychology. I know.
Do not leave me out of this conversation, because this conversation did not come easy for me. In the early years of my career, I worked in prison systems. We were the right hand guy for psychiatry. That's what our role largely was. I mean, I would, when I was early in training, one of the first questions we always ask is, are you prescribed anything? Or are you taking it as prescribed? That was the conversation. And then if there was a notable side effect that because we were taught about side effects, if it was a notable side effect, it was, you need to go back to your prescriber, go back to psychiatry, and talk to them about changing something, right? We weren't allowed to say what to change. We just say changing something, like maybe you need a different dose or a different medication. That was it. But we were the right hand person to psychiatry. And there was a lot of manipulative language about people taking meds, staying on meds. You know, at the time we didn't call it manipulative language. That's come later. Right. That's me saying, like, I had very manipulative language, saying things like, well, isn't it the same as a diabetic taking insulin? Like, that's manipulation right there. It is not the same. Those are not even the same concepts.
Those are all marketing concepts that were put together by the drug companies themselves.
Sure. And it's perpetuated within the mental health industry as a whole. Those things are perpetuated. Or, you know, would you rather be overweight or not depressed? And I'm like, that's so dumb, because if you are overweight, you're likely to be more depressed. So that's even a dumb thing. Like, those words fell out of my mouth. Like, those things came out easily because we were all saying those things to people to keep them compliant. Right? To keep them so they're not aggressive, to keep them, you know, in all these places. And when I worked at a special prison here in my state, and it was a very unique prison. It was a place where the labeled mentally ill clients or inmates from regular Department of Corrections would come, and we were like the tune-up shop. So they would come to us, and then we would do their mental health tune-ups, and then we'd send them back to general population wherever they were at, whether it was max security, minimum, medium security.
Wow.
They came to
us.
So
you worked with all those levels?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Oh, my.
All of them. The only ones I didn't work with were women. These were all men for me.
Oh, my.
But the location that we had was heavily into medication. Heavily. I would say 95% of the guys that came to us would leave on some psychiatric medication easily. So, but I remember having the awakening when I was there, because I was doing some searching around for research on nutrition topics. And there was one inmate in particular. We would have treatment team meetings and things like this. And this inmate couldn't make it out of segregation because they were fighting all the time. So they're constantly in segregation for fighting, which isn't good for a person anyway. And I kept thinking, why are they fighting so much? Blah, blah, blah. I found some research on omega-3 fatty acids, and the research was very, applicable to where I was at in a prison. It was done in a jail. Okay. And they gave the inmates, the ones who were aggressive, omega-3 fatty acids, and it reduced their aggression. And I thought, well, this seems like something simple, like introducing some nutritional concept to reduce aggression in inmates. So here's me, you know, I'm a young clinician at this point, meaning early in my career. I was not young when I started, early in my career. And I bring in all the research articles to this treatment team meeting. And I'm like, I have the solution. I have it, you know, and I'm passing out all these research articles to everybody there. And the psychiatrist looks at it. He picks it up. He looks at it and he looks at me and he goes, "You are not a dietitian."
Oh, no.
And the conversation stopped. That was it. I grabbed up all the research, tucked it away, sat there thinking, what the heck just happened? And then I went back to my office and I cried.
Yeah,
that was what happened. And I'm like, okay.
Private offices
no,
are ladies' rooms, right?
No, we actually had private offices, so it was okay, right? But I thought to myself, what just happened? What, there has to be more, because in dietetics, when you're looking at institutions like this, it was for people who had diabetes, right? Special dietary requirements, allergies, that kind of stuff. There was no special diet for mental health. There was no special diet for this. And, you know, I'm thinking they could have prescribed an omega-3 fatty acid to see how it helped, you know, because there's prescription available for that stuff. But the closed-mindedness of the whole thing was astounding. The whole conversation then after that just revolved around what other medications can we give this person to make them less aggressive. Now, again, at that time, I wasn't thinking maybe the medication is making them aggressive. That wasn't a thought in my mind. It is now. It is definitely now. Like, what are they on that might be causing them to be aggressive, right?
That would get you in even more trouble.
That's what I was going to say. I would look at, like, I had a third eye. I'd probably get written up, like, you know, all the things. So, but, you know, that's why, you know, over time, I couldn't stay there any longer, because I knew there was something disconnected for me working in an environment like that. That's how I kind of, I went on to be a clinical supervisor, actually, for the Drug and Alcohol Treatment Center that was through the Department of Corrections for a hot second, and found myself really discombobulated there. And I was like, you know what? I just got to go into private practice, because this isn't going to be it for me. So that's how I ended up. Yeah, it was a leap of faith.
That's
when
why you
leave,
look happy.
It's Friday. That's why I look happy. Like, make no mistake. But when you get out of alignment with your profession, with the way you're thinking, with and what you're supposed to do, because that's it came to be that the way that they practice in certain institutions is all about liability, right? So it's not really about outcomes as much as it is about liability to do the outcomes the right way. So even when I was trained as a therapist, it was very much manualized therapy. It was done, you have to do it exactly like this, because otherwise the Department of Correction is going to get sued. And so if you get sued, you have to come in and be like, this is what we used. These are the interventions that we used for this client. So it definitely coming out of there was like, what am I doing? You know, like the constraints came off of me too, you know? So, but yeah, so I was practicing in prison for about 6 years, I believe is what it ended up being. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's the long and short of me. So during that time though, I will say that I was medicated. I was partially medicated, and then I came off the medication, and then I had anxiety really bad, which I now know I'm thinking it was probably protracted withdrawal, at least bits and pieces of that. And that's the reason, actually, that is the pivotal moment that I left, because I was having panic attacks and things like that so bad that I went to the doctor, and the doctor prescribed me another medication after I'd already been off for a little bit. Yep. And I thought, I'm not coming off of this anymore. And I quit my job instead.
And on that note, we're going to take a break. Thank you. We'll be right back.
This is Dr. Peter McCullough. You know me from America Out Loud Pulse and the McCullough Report. Well, I'm inviting you to join me in Nashville, July 2nd, 3rd, and 4th for a truly historic experience in 2026. America Out Loud News 250/10 Nashville. I'm calling all patriots to be a part of this unforgettable weekend, packed with inspiring entertainment, incredible fireworks, and nationally recognized speakers who proudly stand for freedom. Together with you and our partners, Clear and the Wellness Company, we'll celebrate two major milestones, 250 years of America and 10 years of America Out Loud News, led by Malcolm Out Loud. I can't wait to see you there, because your presence matters and you are family. So make history with me and Malcolm. Register now at AmericaOutloud.news/Nashville. That's AmericaOutloud.news/Nashville. We'll see you there.
In just 2 minutes per day, you can reclaim your health and cut your grocery bill in half with one simple, convenient product. Our doctor-formulated Green 85 Juice Formula's powerful dose of ultra-concentrated essential nutrients stops hunger in its tracks and supplies your cells with what's missing in the grocery store food. Go to chemicalfreebody.com/outloud today. Get nature's super multivitamin Green 85, empower your immune system, cut down on your grocery bill, and save 20% on your first order.
Looking for a fluoride-free, peptide-based toothpaste? Try Smile from the Wellness Company. This doctor-formulated formula combines powerful peptides, remineralizers, and probiotics to rebuild gum tissue, strengthen teeth, and fight harmful bacteria, all with a refreshing mint flavor. Visit twc.health/outloud and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order.
You wouldn't go a day without brushing your teeth or washing your hands. What about washing your nose? I mean, your nose does filter the air you breathe. Air loaded with bacteria, viruses, and irritants. Make nasal hygiene part of your routine with Clear. No messy bottles to fill, no drowning sensation. Clear is a natural drug-free saline with the added benefit of xylitol, which blocks bacterial and viral adhesion. Available in stores and online at clear.com. That is XLEAR.com.
And we're back. With Dr. Tara Lynn Sell, PhD, de-prescriber, podcast maven, and really a terrific human being. We're so happy to meet you today.
Rebel with a cause, perhaps.
Yeah, like all of us.
Yes.
Welcome to the freedom movement.
Yes, exactly. It's exhausting being here, but
it is.
Yeah,
yes.
This is exhausting work. It is very
challenging,
exhausting.
Every single day.
Yes, we talk about that a lot. The idea that we'll call it advocacy too. Like, advocacy is hard. Like, to keep in the space over and over again is very difficult. And I can't even imagine you, Peter, how long you've been doing this and how much pain you've endured.
70
as
years.
A result. Yes. As
70
a result.
Professional years from the point that he started working with mental patients as a college student.
Yeah, that's a lot of backlash, I'm sure, that you've gotten over the course of your career. Backlash seems like a minimized term for that. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. He's a very determined and principled human being. And I think that that has been what carries him along, is he's got such a strong moral code and principles. Mm-hmm. I've learned a lot from him. And we've been married 42 years.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. Seems like a miracle.
Yeah, it is a miracle, honey.
I get up in the morning and she's in my bed. It's like, how did I get to have the love of my life in my bed for all these years?
For 42 years.
Yeah.
Than that, because you've been married for 42 years. So you've been together longer than that, right?
Yeah, 6 months longer. So.
Oh, you know, that's fast. But hey, good
well,
for you.
Well, we met for one weekend when he came to testify at a trial about lobotomizing a prison inmate in Detroit. And we met as I was assigned to pick him up at the airport. So I picked him up at the airport and we had an attraction there. As it turned out, the man was married, so that went nowhere. But we spent the weekend together where he had to stay over visiting museums and other chaste behaviors. And then we totally lost track of each other after I took him on the airport Tuesday to go home. 11 years later, I heard of him through what turned out to be a mutual acquaintance.
A girlfriend.
She was your girlfriend. Yeah, a former girlfriend of his who was a journalist and had turned to Peter a lot as an expert on some of these mm-hmm. issues. And I said, mm-hmm. well, would you say hi to him? I thought maybe I could do some PR someday or something. I figured he'd be married with 10 kids, you know.
What do they call that? Kismet? Is that what they call that? Kismet?
Well, it's fate, or it's for me, it's God's hand, really. It's like we were meant to be together. I feel like God put this man on my heart before I was born. It just took me a while to figure that out. And
you are lucky. This is the key. This is the key to a happy marriage, guys. Like this is the, I always say this, like be each other's biggest fan. And I can see that you are definitely his biggest fan, and he's your biggest fan too.
Yeah, he is. I've learned so much about myself, and he always holds me up and encourages me, and I never would have been doing this otherwise.
Right, right. Exactly. I say that a lot. My husband, people know him. I talk about him all the time on the air and everywhere. And he was part of my practice, and he is my biggest fan. He is with me everywhere I go. And the best part of my day is when I see him cheering me on from the background, you know, like, go get it. You know, so it's really
that's
nice.
Wonderful.
Yes.
That really makes all the difference.
It does. Well, I mean, relationships, period, when we're talking about mental health, like relationships are so important to mental health. And so when we go back to, I think you had mentioned before, like you have a lot of media attention. A lot of the media attention that I got in the early phases was during the pandemic times. Mm-hmm. And to be very honest, I got very disgusted by all the media attention back there. I am going to say that freely because the media is so biased in what they want you to talk about. And so mm-hmm. it was constant talk about how bad our mental health is. Talk about like how bad all the time. And I finally said to my publicist, I said, can you stop getting me those things? Because I don't want to talk about that anymore. I am done talking about the low level stuff. Does that mean that it went away? No, but I felt like I was contributing to a message that mm-hmm. we just couldn't get out of, right? Like things are so bad. They're bad. And
it's
so
a kind
I had
of brainwashing.
Yeah. So I had to step away from it because once you do one article about it, five other media outlets are going to pick up on that article. And the next thing you know, like I'm smattered all over on different news outlets saying the same thing over and over and over again. And I got disgusted by it. So I said, let me step away from that particular conversation because I can't do it anymore. And then I started talking more about like what to do, like nutritionally and things like that. And I'll tell you what, the media coverage was a lot slower after that.
Yeah.
When I refused to participate in the low level dragging it down, like it changed. Like it was a little bit of crickets after that. And so I was like, well, okay. people like the bad stuff. They don't like the good stuff. So, you know,
the industries like the bad stuff.
Yeah.
That's the issue. The industries are there. They're controlled. They want, they are told to market things. And mm-hmm. they all depend, the major media all depend on advertising. And the greatest source of advertising is big pharma. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it's psych drugs and then yes. that kind of thing. So,
well, you see that. All you got to do is watch the TV for a little bit, like even watch the Super Bowl, right? Like, so the amount of when you're sitting watching a television show, you're like, are there any advertisements that are not big pharma? You know, it's just different meds.
We see
different,
that all the time. Yeah.
All the time. And I'm like, wow, I remember when we used to advertise other things. And now I can't even remember the things that were advertised because it's all just big pharma funded.
Cars, butter. You
cars.
Know.
Yeah. Who knows? Cars and butter. Yeah. I like that. That's funny. Cars and butter. You're right.
Sometimes a luxury vodka or something.
Yes. Bring that stuff back.
Do you ever talk on the media about love between people?
Not much. No, I have not. I've been on Your Tango. I don't know if you know much about Your Tango, but they're kind of a love site. But I haven't done a lot of that. No. Mm-mm. I work with a lot of couples, though. And that's important work, I feel, that I do. But I don't really talk in the media about it. No, because nobody wants that from me. I talk about what they want from me. Right. Nobody wants love. They'll maybe five ways to ensure that you have a divorce. Oh no, that's what they would want to listen to, right? Not five ways to keep your marriage strong.
Yeah,
so.
It's all propagandized. That this love is propagandized out of sight. Love has been mm-hmm. so denigrated that you mention love and people think you're talking about unicorns, fantasies.
Okay, I'm going to bring in a part of this conversation because there are so many men and women, but mostly women, that are medicated that they can't even get in touch with love anymore
right.
because they can't get in touch with connecting to themselves or to their partner. So I think, you know, I'm sure there is research on here about how many divorces there are with people who are on even just your typical antidepressants. It's got to be high. If you were to poll that information as the divorce rate skyrockets, I bet you it might go in line with the increasing antidepressant prescription rates too, because that almost ruined my marriage, is me being on an antidepressant for 6 years. So that I couldn't look at my husband like he loved me, and he didn't change. I was the one who was just miserable, you know. So
and add to that, you know, the changes that women go through with perimenopause and menopause, their hormones crashing.
Well, I mean, it's interesting now about the black box warnings that have been lifted for hormone replacement therapy for women, because if you've looked at the statistics about when was it pulled from the market? The late 90s, I think, something like that.
Mid-90s, yes.
So HRT went down to zero, like prescribing HRT was practically zero, right? Then psychiatric medication went and increased.
Actually,
any
that was
psych
planned.
I'm sure it was. No doubt.
The studies that were done on hormones and their so-called damaging effects, there were several of the named clinicians who were senior in those studies were also consulting with Eli Lilly. I looked it up at the time. And
I believe this 100%.
And
there's nothing I don't believe anymore. You know, I'm a tried and true conspiracy theorist who is not a conspiracy
the
theorist.
The same with cigarettes, actually, because I saw before it was unavailable research that was done, marketing research that was done on disposable income. And there is little disposable income in families. But a piece of it was going towards cigarettes. And then you saw the cigarette, not that it was inappropriate. People shouldn't be smoking. I smoked for 30 years. I miss it. But I'm glad
that's
I don't
smoke. That's a different podcast. That's a different show.
Yeah, that's a different show. But but the smoking was targeted. The cigarettes were targeted in part because psychiatric drugs replaced them. especially SSRIs, which were coming in the late 80s. And the marketing to them, Peter wrote in Toxic Psychiatry, his first popular book about the whole industry. He wrote about the huge circus-like sales. What were they? They were the, you know, the attachments that sell things next to the convention that's going on, supposedly giving you the latest scientific information and all those industry exhibits and so forth. And it was a true circus even then in the late 80s when he went and toured that and then wrote about it at an American Psychiatric Association meeting.
Have you seen, there's a graphic, and I've shared this graphic before. I'll do the best that I can to describe it. Once they stopped the HRT, the rates of prescribing antidepressants, benzodiazepines, and sleep aids in women like went up like a mountain. Okay, so it just blew up like a mountain. Then if you pull the suicide rates of women from that time period, guess what that looks like? The same mountain. So you can practically put those two images together and it looks exactly the same. And I'm like, doesn't this scare anybody? Doesn't this like put it together? And so what do you get from people? Well, you know, correlation doesn't equal causation, right? That's the argument that everybody has, you know? And I'm like, well, but when two things are similarly related, you can look at that correlation as if it can be clinically relevant. So I'm so tired of the dismissal with correlation doesn't equal causation, because it happens all the time. People say that to dismiss anything that is related negatively to psychiatric medication. So I'm like, but that looks very suspicious to me. You know, when you put them back to back and they're like, wow, that looks the same. There's some, it makes you critically think and go, this is weird. I think
and
there's something
to this. And of course,
you're
critically thinking, and that's what really, that's one of the purposes is critically thinking citizens is not the most popular position to be in these days. We're supposed to salute and do what we're told.
You know, what's interesting is, so I graduated my bachelor's degree back in 1991, and I had to take a class called critical thinking. That was a that was a whole class that was required. And I'm like, all right, that's fine. Those classes are not required anymore. And I'm like, and we also had to take a philosophy class. And I'm like, that combined with critical thinking was very interesting. At the time, it was just like, you know, I have to check these off my transcript boxes, right?
Right.
But now I'm like, please, can we bring some of that back? Because it just doesn't exist.
Well, you see, it makes you a more dangerous woman. And a doctor.
Yes, there's got to be a trifecta somewhere. There's going to be a third. I don't know what that's going to be. But yes, you're right. I can be looked at. And people do look at me that way. They'll say that on social media. You're dangerous. You're gonna kill people, right, with this.
Oh, and I'm like, I'm so sorry.
Oh, no, don't be sorry. It's fine. It's water off a duck's back at this point, right? You have to have a thick skin. Right, Peter? You have to have a thick skin.
By the way, I want you to know that is very often planned very deeply, that kind of response. That's not just some individual human being out in some city somewhere reading what you had to say occasionally, but a lot of it is deliberate, and it's it comes from censors themselves, especially in COVID. Tens of thousands of censorship individuals who had come out of the communications departments of universities, they went into the censorship business. And the federal government at the time hired tens of thousands of them and sent them around. They worked for big tech. They worked for Facebook, for YouTube, all these other things. Or they worked in higher federal administrative positions, pressuring those big tech fields. We were on YouTube. We had over 40, Dr. Bregan had over 40,000 followers. And he was being attacked both for his statements about COVID. And then in addition to that, for his basic commentaries on psychiatric drugs and the hazards of psychiatry, and with some of his movies and videos being taken down. So that was it for us. We were we were censored off of YouTube.
Oh, I believe.
When I announced our book, COVID-19 and the Global Predators, in a column on YouTube, we were immediately taken down for life.
In a video, yeah.
COVID was a weird time. That was a bizarre time. Well, again, same thing. The only thing they wanted me to talk about was one narrative around it, right? That was it. And anytime I wanted to say anything else about it, like, nobody wanted that narrative. They tell people, when you think about the media and they reach out to you or reach out to your PR person, they tell the PR person exactly what they want to hear from you.
Yeah.
That's what they do. They say, I want a commentary on this thing with this angle. And that's it. That's it. They don't want your thoughts. They want their thoughts, and they want it backed by somebody with a PhD or MD.
Right. We've got less than a minute left. We're talking with Dr. Tara Lynn Sell, and who's a psychologist and a terrific human being. This is the Bregan Hour with Dr. Peter Bregan and Ginger Bregan. We air live on Saturdays and Sundays at 4 p.m. on AmericaOutloud.news. You can go there, listen to their live feed, and you'll hear us at 4 p.m. on Saturday, and then repeat it again 4 p.m. on Sunday. Then it's released by podcast as podcast to all the podcast platforms. And if you simply Google Bregan Hour or go to your favorite podcast platform and search Bregan Hour or the Bregan Hour.
Like Spotify, right?
Like Spotify, like YouTube, Spotify and various others, then you'll find us. They're on all of them. You can also find us for a long time on podbean.com.
Yeah, particularly Podbean.
Yes. And now we're out of time.
They have everything I've done.
Yes, they do. Now we're out of time. We'll be right back.
Are you looking for healthy snacks, but you've had enough of all the sweet, sugary energy bars? Good news! There's new bars to try. That savory, crunchy, and packed with goodness. Bear Bars are based just on 6 simple natural ingredients. A certified organic veggie nut and seed bar. That's low temp dried, never baked or fried. Bear Bars are plant-based, gluten-free, and loaded with nutrients and protein. Head over to bearbar.com/outloud and get the exclusive discount just for America Out Loud listeners. That's bear.com/outloud.
I'm Doug Evans, author of The Sprout Book. I want to share something that's powerful. You can grow your own food right on your kitchen countertop. Sprouting is an ancient method that turns ordinary seeds into living vegetables in just 3 to 5 days. No soil, no sunshine, no fertilizer. Just seeds, water. For under $1 a serving, you can grow nutrient-dense packed greens anywhere. City apartments, dorm rooms, off-the-grid cabins. In a time when food prices are rising, sprouting gives you control, abundance, and peace of mind. Join the self-reliance revolution. Go to thesproutingcompany.com/outloud and use the code OUTLOUD for an exclusive offer.
Feeling off lately? Bloated, brain fog, low energy? It could be parasites. These silent invaders that weaken your gut, immune system, and mental clarity. That's why Dr. Peter McCullough and the doctors at The Wellness Company formulated ivermectin and mebendazole cleanse, a medical-grade solution designed to help eliminate parasites and restore balance. No gimmicks, just real medicine trusted by top doctors. Go to twc.health/outloud and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order. Take control of your health today.
And I quote, you and I have a rendezvous with destiny. We will preserve for our children this, the last best hope of man on earth. Or we will sentence them to take the first step into 1,000 years of darkness. Well, those are the words of number 40. Ronald Reagan, shine bright as America approaches 250 years. AmericaOutloud.news is that place to awaken your heart, soul, and mind to the Out Loud truth.
We're back.
This is a fun interview.
Thank Thank you.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
I'm glad.
As I started to recover from my stroke, one of the benefits was that Ginger became more and more active on the radio. And you do a great job, honey.
Thanks. Thanks. That means a lot.
I like that. I like having fun interviews. They bring a little bit of levity to some of these conversations because they're hard conversations.
They are right? hard conversations.
And, mm-hmm. Yeah. And so Jen, my podcast co-host for the Gaslit Truth podcast, we were podcasting today too. And at the end we said, you know, it is tiring being an advocate. It is so exhausting. And I said, because our email inboxes are filled with people that are just suffering.
Yeah,
they're desperate and they are suffering and they're sharing their stories. I find it fascinating that they share their stories to people they don't even know, but they think they know us, right? Like, and they're sharing them in like novels on their email. And I said to Jen, I said, I don't know how much more trauma I can endure. Like, because it's like, you know, they're talking about their trauma stories and all the trauma in the psych med industry and things like that.
And you witness it's a it lot. As you witness it. It's a yeah. third flow other to other.
Yeah,
you
absolutely. That. Yes. Absolutely.
And it is traumatic. Yes.
Mm-hmm. And so we were talking today about how important it is to, you know, have some boundaries and set some more self-care and all of those things. But yet advocacy still needs to happen. But it's exhausting and it's traumatic for the advocates in the space. So if anyone is listening and they're advocates in the space, like I see you and I hear you and I see that for you too, Peter. So, and you too, Ginger. So it's very exhausting. So thank you for continuing all these years doing it.
Like, well, I'll tell you one of the secrets, and it took me a while to learn this because I thought you had to have an impact. And Peter said huge impact. But on the other hand, not everything changed. You know, you've still got big pharma out there. And yeah. You tell me your philosophy on this, because it's really sustained me. And it's certainly sustained you 70 years.
Well, I think I began to realize fairly quickly that I could not predict my effects as a reformer. I settled for doing what I thought was right, not with having the effect I wanted to. And I think in general, that's stood me in good stead. As I've grown older, I've kind of honed that down to a lot finer thought, which is when I meet God and he's deciding which road I'll continue on, I think he's going to be more interested in how I treated my loved ones than how much I accomplished in the world. And I think that, and I'd like to think that we'll ultimately be judged by how much love we brought into the world in whatever area we were in.
Which I think includes advocacy. Advocacy can be very thankless in some surface ways, but it is an act of love toward humankind and yeah. towards our fellow humans, individuals, groups. And so that I think is part of the picture.
It reminds me about a year ago. I don't know if you know who Dr. Hyla Kass is. I don't know if you've heard of Hyla Kass at all. She's kind of well known in the addiction space, and she does a lot of nutrition, addiction, whatever. To me, she's like a big name to know. I ran into her at a conference about a year ago, and I said, Hyla, oh my gosh, like, you know, fangirl again, right? And I said, all these years, I said, I don't believe that you got the recognition that you deserved in all these years, because she was a big change maker. And she looked at me like I was ridiculous, and she goes, that's not what it was about. And I went, ooh, you're right. That's not what it's about. It was about serving people. That was her whole thing. And here I am like, you didn't get the recognition that you needed and you deserved and all this stuff. And she's like, that was never the point. I was like, wow, that literally took me off my feet and gave me a little bit of an attitude adjustment right then and there to be like, okay, that this is not what this is about, everybody. This is about... hopefully exerting change in the name of care, right? Still in the mm-hmm. name of care, not about, you know, how big a person is going to get in this space, mm-hmm. right? So, and I think as long as we stay there.
Mm-hmm. I think that's the healthiest viewpoint to have. And mm-hmm. I think the anger issue relates closely to this. The more you're frustrated for not getting what you want out of being a reformer, the more anger you get, the more you spread bad vibes in the world, and the more you corrupt your own spiritual state. And early on, my early years, I just at times felt so much resentment of what people did with my ideas or ignored them or whatever else.
Not to mention what people were doing to other people.
And what they're, thank you. That's right.
Like lobotomizing people and so forth.
Children.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Little toddlers.
And yeah. I tried to give up my anger to God. I said to God, listen, I can't continue being a healthy reformer if I'm angry about everything I'm looking at and everything that people try to do with me, but also what they're doing other people. And if you want me to continue, please maybe get somebody else to do the angry part because it's not what I want to do. And that's been my view ever since. God, if you need somebody to be angry, get somebody else because it's not good for me.
It's not going to be me either. I'm done with being angry.
Don't get your anger on me.
So, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. It, you know, it's interesting because, like, I don't know who gets the bigger voice. I don't know why some people are chosen and other people aren't. I can't make sense of that. And people do tell me, they're like, you know, you have a bigger voice than you think. And I'm like, I do. And they're like, yes, you have a much bigger voice than what you think. And again, like Hyla Cass, my goal was never to have a big voice. My voice was to have a voice that was heard. The two things aren't always the same, right? If you want to hear me, that doesn't mean I need to be screaming at you. I need to have a voice that people want to listen to and be heard. So that's what I'm after.
I think sometimes the bigger voices are the ones that are picked because they're going to harm industry the least.
That is a mic drop moment right there, Ginger. Mm-hmm. We're dropping mics over here.
And
yes.
Then there's the, you know, and then there's the voices that are so dangerous to the status quo of the industries, the combined industries that are called healthcare and includes insurance, it includes the hospitals, the corporations, the doctors, APA, American Psych and American Psychology Association.
Don't start on that.
All big pharma.
Don't.
But all of that. And, you know, a voice like Dr. Bregan's became so dangerous that in the 90s, he just stopped getting invitations altogether with a few exceptions through up until 2019. And then since then,
I gotta tell you though, Peter, you're not missing out on a lot. You're definitely not missing out on a lot.
No, I know. Getting
these invitations.
Yes.
You need to be invited to the right tables. That's the whole deal, being invited to the right table. But I've had these conversations with my husband too. And, you know, we've said before the last like 5 years, really, we'd say things like, I don't know that we're gonna see the change in my lifetime that I'm hoping for, but I'm seeing glimmers of hope. I really am. Am I seeing it on the level of big pharma? Not really. I'm seeing it on a consumer level though. I really am, because right. The more people are injured and suffering, the bigger that group is demanding change, at least for themselves. So I think we're seeing it there. Whereas, but 5 years ago, I wasn't even hearing the conversations.
Right. And we're seeing that
now,
too. You're right.
Yes. Now I'm hearing the conversations and I'm seeing it. And social media is kind of blowing up on that side, you know, with online Facebook support groups and things like, which I've never seen before.
Yeah.
So I don't know that the change is going to be from the top. I think it's going to be from consumerism up instead of the other way down. But I do think that we are finally seeing some of that in our lifetime. So
yes,
maybe not to the level that we want or need, but it's definitely happening.
And thank you so much for your voice in that change.
Oh no, I mean you guys are the OG over here, so you're just kind of passing down the voice to me. So I'm appreciative of
you're the new generation, my dear.
That's right.
Along with your colleagues in the yes. same arena.
Yes, absolutely. It's been, I'd like to say it's been fun, but it hasn't been fun being an advocate so much. This has been fun, but that part not always fun. So yeah.
All right, this is the Bregan Hour with Dr. Peter Bregan, psychiatrist, and his wife, Ginger Bregan. And we have just talked with Dr. Tara Lynn Sell, PhD. Her name is spelled Dr. Tara Lynn, T-E-R-A-L-Y-N. And if you Google Dr. Tara Lynn, you should find everything you need. She does a podcast, The Gaslit Truth.
Gaslit Truth Podcast.
Yep. Gaslit Truth Podcast. And I'm
Which
sure
I'll be appearing on.
Yes, Peter will be
not too far.
Peter will be a guest on that in the near future. And we air live Saturdays and Sundays at 4 p.m. on AmericanOutloud.news. And then we go to podcast. Thank you for very much to our wonderful audience for coming again and listening to us. And we will see you again next week.
And I have an additional thought. If you want to meet us personally, come to the America Out Loud Conference in
Nashville,
Tennessee.
In July of 2026. That's this year, folks. And if you go to AmericaOutloud.news, click on Nashville, you'll see all the details. Peter's going to be presenting. We're going to be there for 3 days. I can't believe I'm saying that. And we are out of time. Thank you, everyone. Bye-bye.